Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the OutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear, and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about predator hunting. I keep getting questions about this from different parts of the country. We've talked to a lot of guys in the Southwest, so I've kind of poked around looking for guys in different parts of the country, and I got with this on the phone today. Guy's been hunting coyotes for about 16 years, took fourth in world championship last year. His name is Rusty Gamble. Hey, Rusty, how you doing?
Good. How are you, John?
Good, good. So before we roll into this, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself and where you're from and what you do?
Well, I'm from Malad, Idaho. It's just over the border from Utah by Salt Lake. I've been hunting coyotes, like you said, for about 16 years. I weld. I'm a welder on the side. That's where I get all my money. But, yeah, I'm big into the coyote contests. I've been doing contests serious for about 6-7 years now. Try and get in as many of them as I can.
Nice. So you're up in Idaho right now. You guys got out and did a little coyote calling yesterday, and you said the day before.
Yep.
So tell me what happened. Did you guys get one?
Well, our very first stand, we went to a spot that last year we had drove by early in the morning before it was light and howled. And we had a bunch of coyotes howl back at us. So this year we went back over there right before dark, and I started calling with the rabbit distress because I actually forgot my remote to my electronic call, so I was just using hand calls, Carver hand calls, and started doing a rabbit distress. And I'd done one series, and I just barely started into my second series of rabbit distress, and I seen a coyote about 250 yards away pop up on one of the ridges. And it wasn't downwind of me yet, but it was working on it. The wind, I like the wind in my face on most stands, and the wind was from the right to the left, and he come in pretty much to the left of me, and I was hand calling, so my call wasn't out in front of me, and he started coming, and he'd circled. He'd come off the ridge straight at me, but then instead of coming up over the next ridge, he circled down behind me and got our wind, and I seen him leaving straight downwind of me.
Gotcha.
We did another stand after that, and nothing.
So it's interesting. You said you like the wind in your face. Like,
yeah.
I'm the exact opposite. I like from right to left or left to right. And I feel like, because when I have the wind in my face, they typically come from behind me. My approach is usually so low impact that I don't feel like I disturb too much going in, that I have a really good chance of them coming from behind me. And I'm like meticulous about scent control. I'm curious, so why is it that why do you prefer to have it in your face?
Well, I hunt where I hunt, there's a lot of it's flatter. There's not, I mean, certain spots there's hills and stuff, but you're driving in through the desert and you can see for miles. So you get a hill in front of you as you're driving in, you stop before you go over that next hill, and that's where you're going to call. A big wide open area, you have the hill that you come up to hide your truck. You go up over that hill. Everything in front of that hill has not seen you drive in yet. So I'll just go up over that hill right there, and I'm driving with the wind coming at me. Trying to, anyways. So when I go over that hill, it's all new country. I got the wind in my face, and I know that there's nothing that's going to come from behind me because my truck's back there for one, and I just drove through it.
No, okay, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. I kind of do something similar to that too. I look to get to a hill or something like that, or a big ridge that blocks my point of approach or the side of my truck. I typically walk pretty far from my truck. But no, what you do is that makes sense.
And
That,
then
that.
another thing is, it's like I don't, because I said I do a lot of contests. So the faster I can get out of my truck, get set up, and do the stand, the better, because the more stands I can do, the more coyotes I can call in that day that I'm in the contest. So if I park at the behind the hill, all I got to do is walk 50 yards up over the hill and then call. And another reason the wind in my fa I like the wind in my face is it seems like when them coyotes, if I have a left to right wind, the coyotes will try and get my wind a lot more than if I have it in my face. If they know that the wind's blowing straight behind me, they don't seem to try and circle as much. They just like, oh, I'm not gonna go clear around to smell him. I'm just gonna run in and see what it is real quick. I have a lot more hard charging coyotes with the wind in my face than I do from with the wind left to right or right to left. Because the further your scent goes out, the wider it is. I'm sure you've heard it said, or people say your scent cone.
Yeah,
Because
so it
right
starts at
close
a
to
point.
you, yeah, right close to you, you don't, there's, I mean, a little line, but the further away it gets, the wider it gets. So the coyotes don't actually have to get right straight downwind of you when they're coming in, and they'll smell you.
10-4. That makes sense. I want to back up a little bit. You said you were using a hand call and you did a sequence. Talk to me about what a sequence is with your hand call.
When I start off a stand, I start off doing the rabbit distress, fairly quiet, not blowing on it as hard as I can, you know. And I'll do a set like that, and if there's a coyote close, he'll usually come in quick. But then if I don't see one coming in or nothing, sometimes they'll even howl back at you with a rabbit distress. They think there's another coyote in their territory, killing their food, basically. And yeah, if I don't see one with the first quieter series, I'll do a second series about 2 or 3 minutes later. And the second one, I'll blow on the call a lot louder to try and get the sound to go out there further to get the coyotes that are further away. And
So
typically,
how long do you blow for the first series? Excuse me.
I don't blow on them for very long, like 30 seconds for the first
And then you
one.
wait,
And then,
two or three minutes in between.
yeah.
Okay.
Just give them time to, if they're close with that quieter calling to come in and pop up on a hill. Sometimes with the quieter call, they'll pop up on the hill, but they won't come in. They'll just sit and look, trying to see things.
Right.
And then if you do see one with the quieter calling, then you do the same thing again. You call quiet and try and coax him into you.
Right.
But after the first series, if you don't see nothing, then I really start blowing on the call, loud as I can do it, to get the sound out there, to get coyotes that are further out, get their attention.
Oh yeah, makes perfect sense. And I do the same thing with electronic call. Start off low and then increase it, increase the intensity, increase the sound.
I've like in contests, just to save time, started off loud numerous times, and you see a coyote 200 yards down pop out of a ravine and take off running. They know that rabbits aren't that loud, you know what I mean?
Right.
And if you're doing the calling loud and you have a coyote coming in from way out, you got to remember to as it gets closer, to turn that sound down. Because they'll get
Yeah.
close, and if you still have it loud, they know that it's not right.
10-4. Oh, that's good. That's good information. So you go to these contests, you travel, you go to different states. How do you like to scout at these places out? How do you pick your hunting spots?
I howl. I try and get there a day or two before, and I drive around at night and I howl. And how I decide what spots have the most coyotes, granted, this only works if they're howling, because some nights they don't howl. Some nights they're quiet. But if they're howling good that night, I like to go, say, you find a road, a desert strip road that goes for 30, 40 miles. I start off, I do a howl. If I hear coyotes howling in a couple different directions, because usually a closer, or not a closer, a further away pack will start howling. And if you sit there for a minute after that pack starts howling, it seems like you'll get a closer pack, and then a closer pack, and then they just kind of. It seems like the further away pack howls first, and then other packs closer and closer and closer to you start howling.
Like bull elk.
And what's that?
It's like bull elk do the same thing.
Do they?
Yeah.
And then
Yeah.
I'll go about 10 miles, and I'll do it again, and I'm hoping to get the same thing, a pack far away and then a couple different packs closer and closer and closer. And I'll do that through that whole stretch of road. And if I get that couple different packs every 10 miles or so, I know that there's a large amount of coyotes in that area. So then I'll come back and I'll the next day and I'll hunt close to the road first off and do the whole 30-mile stretch. And then I'll start finding roads that go out further, little roads that cut off the main road. Because in them contests, I want roads that I can travel fast on too. So I'll do that
Right.
main road, and then towards later in the day, I'll start going off on little roads off the left or the right or whatever, and getting out a little bit further and doing stands. And that's basically how I scout for a contest.
Cool.
And a lot of
So,
I look for a, if there's a lot of crap, coyote scat or whatever on the roads, that's another thing that shows you that there's a lot of different packs, because they use roads, fence lines, stuff like that to mark their territories. And they always do their business on the fence lines, ditch banks, roads, And that's how you know that there's a boundary. So if you're calling and you're on a fence line and you've noticed that there's a lot of coyote crap on the fence line, and you see a coyote coming on the other side of the fence line, a lot of times you won't get them to come in. They'll sit there on that fence or up on a hill or something a little ways away from that fence line and just howl at you. They'll sit down and just sit there, howl at you a couple times. You can throw every sound in the book, every sound on your call at them, and they won't come in. If you sit there for a while, stop calling, sit there for a while, and move to the other side of the fence, a lot of times you can call that coyote in. They know that they're not supposed to cross that fence, because if they do, they're going to get their butt kicked by another coyote.
Oh, that's good info. That's actually I kind of, I mean I knew that to an extent, but I never thought about jumping the fence or
Yeah,
jumping
if
the
you just
boundary
sit there
line.
till that coyote gets bored and walks off, you go over there to where it was at. I mean, you got to wait a little while.
Yeah, of
But
course.
you go over there to where it's at. A lot of times, if you give it time to get away, a ways off, and you call from his side of the fence, you'll be able to call him right back in.
That's cool.
Granted, he
That's
doesn't
interesting.
see you or smell you or something,
Right. Cool. What are some of the things that you obviously you do some howling, you're looking for scat. What are some of the things you do for, like, do you look for certain terrain features, or what else are you doing to, like, pick your spots?
I'm not a very picky when it comes to finding spots. Like,
Okay.
we'll go for the World Championship last year. We went to an area where it was a lot of juniper trees, and
Oh, sorry,
we
excuse me, one second. Where was it held?
the oh the
Where?
the contest, it was in Arizona.
Oh, it was in Arizona. Sorry, by Tucson, right?
No, I can't remember the I can't remember the name. Holbrook, Arizona.
Holbrook. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And we actually, for the first day, we hunted in New Mexico, and then the second day we moved back and was hunting in Arizona. But last year
Got
I didn't, we got there just in time to check in. We had no scouting, nothing. So we were just kind of winging it. I had a buddy that helped me out and told me where he'd gone in the past and done pretty good. So we went out there on the first day and we did good. I can't remember exactly how many we got. I think we got 7 the first day. And then the second day, we had no idea where we were going, so we just howled in different spots all night long and ended up finding a spot in the dark. We couldn't see, what it looked like or anything. So we wake up in the morning and it's just flat. Just flat, no brush, nothing. And we're like, oh man, how are we gonna do this? So anyways, we drove away from that spot because it was hard to find the places to hide your truck or whatever. And tried calling in other spots where there was hills and trees and stuff, and didn't do any good. So we did that for about 3 hours in the morning. We ended up driving back to the flat spot, and I have a tarp that I use to cover my truck. So when I don't have anywhere
Okay.
to hide it, I just throw this. It's a little, it's actually, they're like a canvas type duck hunting blind. And I bought six
Okay.
of them because they're 12 foot by 54 inches. I bought six of them and
Okay.
sewed them all together so I can cover my whole truck. And we went out there to that flat stuff, and it really looked like the grass was about 3, 4 inches tall. Like, you could see for miles. And you couldn't see coyotes out there. And anybody in their right mind would not have called it. Like, you can't see nothing, you know what I mean?
Right, yep.
Well, we would cover the truck up with the tarp, and we would walk a long ways from the truck, quarter of a mile at least. But you look back at the truck and it doesn't look like it. I mean, there's no reflection, nothing. And that's when we started calling coyotes in.
Wow.
We
How many did
ended
you
up
get over
getting
there?
4 coyotes. We had to be checked back in by 2 o'clock, I think. But yeah, we ended up getting 4 coyotes, and you'd be sitting there calling, and all of a sudden you'd see a coyote. I don't know if they were coming out of holes or just little ravines or what, but they were out there, and we did good. We started calling them in. Like, if we would have just done that first thing, we would have got a lot more
Yeah,
coyotes.
I was gonna say, yeah, if you were stuck to the plan.
Know?
Yeah, no, jeez. Yeah, it's crazy
So, I
how
mean,
that
you're
really, really, really flat stuff has these little undulations or these little like swales where like a watershed or something like that, and I could swallow up a coyote real quick.
So yeah, back to being picky. I mean, if you know that there's coyotes around, if
Yeah.
you've scouted or whatever, it doesn't matter what the territory looks like. If they howl at night, they're there during the day.
Right.
They've just got good at, I mean, it's wide open. They know that people can see them when they're driving by, so they just lay down in a little wash or low spot or anything.
Right. Well, that's cool, man. That's a neat trick though with the truck. I never even thought about that. That just
Yeah.
for me, it just seems like that's too much work. I'm not. I mean, I love coyote calling. I love prairie hunting, but
Yeah, it
I don't know.
seriously,
I don't know, man. You're a
after I
serious
got the,
coyote hunter, so I get it.
yeah, it only takes a minute to throw the tarp over the truck and then
Okay.
just pull it right off, throw it back on the back of the truck, you're good to go. It doesn't take any time at all. I mean, sewing it together did, but after that, it's simple to do. Definitely
So,
helps a lot.
how do you decide what call you're going to use?
It depends on the year, that or the time of the year.
Okay.
During the summer, I use a lot of howling, pup distress, challenge howls, just because they're so territorial with having their pups and all that stuff. But then in the fall, mainly all I use is a rabbit distress. So maybe a little bit of pup distress. And the
Okay.
fighting sounds in the wintertime and breeding sounds, howling a lot.
Yeah, I never messed with the actual coyote sounds all that much. I've kind of just been a, distress call type guy. If I'm trying to paint the picture or trying to, create the illusion, I'll. Like, for instance, one of the things I like to do is I like to use a fox distress call, gray fox. And a lot of times I'll simultaneously add in like an aggressive male bark or something like that where, it creates the illusion that there's a coyote or at least two coyotes messing around with a fox or vice versa. And coyotes really don't like fox, and I feel like that kind of that little combination has worked for me several times. Pup distress is, I don't typically use that as as the meat and potatoes of my calls, but I will definitely add it to the tail end most of the time, and once in a while I'll even start with it. But it's never the thing that I call constant. I typically look at the terrain, I look at the food sources. If there's a lot of rabbits in the area, I'm going to go with a rabbit. If it's a place that's pretty void of rabbits, I'll go with a rodent of some sort or a bird. If I'm up way high in the mountains and I don't necessarily care if I call it a mountain lion or a bobcat or a coyote or whatever, I'll even use like fawn in distress or stuff, a little bit bigger animal. Fine
I've
works a little bit for
I'm
us.
the same way. I didn't think to add that in. I'm just like, I know I hunt the desert, but there's the rivers and stuff that run through the desert out here. And the rabbit distress works really good out away from the water. But I know when you move closer to the water, because everybody knows that around the water is where a lot of the coyotes are. So a lot of people go out there and blow on their rabbit calls or use their e-calls, and they use jackrabbit distress. But I've found if you go to those same areas where everybody's hunting and use like just a mouse distress or a bird distress, you call in a lot more coyotes because the average coyote hunter is not doing those different sounds. They're just, everybody knows to call in coyotes with the jackrabbit. So if you change it up a little bit, and even animals that aren't around the area, like I have a groundhog distress. We don't have groundhogs. It works. It works sometimes. And then there's also prairie dogs, those little squeaks and stuff. It's just curiosity. They're like, whoa, what is that? And they'll come check it out.
Oh, for sure. I've
get a lot
actually
of
had
my
some. Go ahead.
I get a lot of my sounds from Tony Tebby, and
Okay.
he's got one sound. It's a screaming monkey, and I'm not joking. I've called in coyotes with it before.
I
So
bet.
it's a lot of the coyotes come in not because they're hungry, just out of curiosity.
Yeah. Well, I
It's
think
pretty
it kind
crazy.
of invokes a kind of primal thing in them, you know, an
Yeah.
instinctual
Any sort of
dumbness.
distress sound.
You know, I've often thought about many times when my kids were young, when they were babies.
Yeah.
I wanted to record them because, you know, sometimes they cry for like 15, 20 minutes, you know, straight, and it's like pretty damn intense. I was like, I wonder if I record this and I try to go put in a call with it, if I'm going to call something in. I always
I
wanted to
bet
see
you would.
that, but
I've heard people do it, but I've or heard of
yeah.
people do it. I don't know if I'm sure it would. Maybe not real
Oh, yeah.
good, but I'm sure it would work a couple times.
Oh, I don't know. My niece right now, she sounds like a rabbit in distress when she goes. So, she got a real high-pitched like cry and stuff, and I'm like, oh, that sounds like that might work pretty good.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I've been real successful with some of the domestics too, like kitten distress and, you know,
Yep.
like pigs and
Chicken.
goats and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, those
Yeah,
seem to work
I
pretty good.
started recording my own sounds a little bit, and we've got some like puppy distress sounds, and I have that on my call right now, and it works pretty good. I was surprised. Just little newborn puppies, like
Okay.
domestic puppies, and I've had like pretty good luck with it. And then we also
Which
had some.
call are you using?
I use the Icotec GC500.
Okay. Yeah, because I was gonna say on the Fox Pro, I think the file format, I don't know if it takes MP3 or anything like that. I think it's a like
No,
proprietary. That's
you
what.
can download any
Okay.
of Tony's sounds on your Fox Pro.
Okay. So I wasn't
His
sure because I.
sound, he's one of the only ones you can download them on any call. They work on any call.
Interesting. No, I was just kind of thinking, like, if I ever did try to record, because I got some pretty good recording equipment, I could probably get some good, decent sound from some.
Yeah.
Cool. So
Yeah.
walk me through. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
Walk me through a calling sequence. Actually, from start to finish, tell me like your whole like a ideal setup. Paint me a picture. Say, you know, I park my truck here. I look for this. I look for that. I get into a spot. I got this. This is what I'm overlooking. The wind is doing this, and this is how I call. This is my sequence.
All right. So when I go calling, if I'm not out calling, I'm looking at my phone. It granted, if I have service, you know what I mean? And I look at that, I have that Onyx Maps app on my phone, and I look at the, you can see the hills, you can see the open areas, you can see where you can set up before you even get over to it. And so I'll be driving down the road and I'll find on my map a little open area just over a hill next to the road. And so I'll park my truck on this side of the hill and I'll walk up over into that open area and I'll set my call right in the center of that open area, and then I'll set right on the edge. And I like to set up so the coyotes have to come right to me. And then I will sit there for just a second, kind of get settled in or whatever, look around a little bit. When I'm saying an open area, I can still see. It's just sagebrush, you know what I mean? It's not like trees or anything. So I can see out across the valley, but I like to have just a little open area so I can have good shots when they come in. And I'll usually start off with a rabbit distress or a bird distress, fairly quiet on the call. And then if I don't have anything coming in, oh, and like I said earlier, I like the wind in my face. If I don't have any luck with the first sound, I don't see anything pop up or anything, I'll turn the call up and I'll do that same sound again, just a little bit louder. And a lot of times you'll see them perk up 8, 9 thousand yards away and just look. When they look, I think to myself, all right, they know something's up here. What do I do to get them to come in? So I'll change it up. I'll do a little, just a pup distress just for a second, and then shut it back off to, or turn instantly, like switch it back to that rabbit distress. And in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, there's a rabbit up here. A pup's trying to get it, and the rabbit bit it or something, you know what I mean? And then the coyote goes back to biting the rabbit or whatever, and the rabbit starts squealing again. So then that coyote's like, oh man, I can take that rabbit from the pup. So it comes running up. I don't know. It's just I try and picture everything in my mind as I'm going through it. I had a old there was an old guy, and he was a government trapper around my town, and he told me that. And ever since he told me to picture, try and make a real scenario, like if you can play your call as if something is going down, like that you could see happening in the wild. And after I started doing that, I started calling in a lot more coyotes. I mean, in general, people tell you, call for 2 minutes, wait for 2 minutes. Call for 2 minutes, wait for 2 minutes. But a coyote, if you think about it, a coyote's getting a rabbit, it's not going to scream for 2 minutes.
No.
It's gonna scream for just a second and then stop. It either got away or the coyote killed it. So I called just, 30 seconds and then wait for a while. I don't know. It's hard to explain because every single stand is different, because
Right.
it's never the same.
Right.
You just
You want to
kind of.
laugh? You know when I've had the most success is when I play the call straight through for like 4 or 5 minutes. I don't know what it is. I've done a lot of what you were just describing, and maybe it's just the area that I hunt or what or the sound that I use or sounds that I use, but for some reason, when I just like wail on the rabbit for 4 or 5 minutes straight, that's when coyotes are just like, I can't take it anymore. I gotta go see what the hell's going on.
No, I've done that too. I mean, it works. It works good. I don't know.
Bottom line is it probably all works at one point or another.
Yeah. And you just got to catch the coyote at the right time in the right spot with the right wind.
Yep. Exactly. So cool. Well, man, that's all I got for you today. You got anything cool coming up? You going to be entering any good contests or big contests in the near future?
I'm in a contest right now. It's not a big contest or anything. It's a long contest. Mm-hmm. It goes for a month long. It's called Fawn Lives Matter. And
okay.
And you got a month, and you go out and kill as many coyotes as you can in that month. I'm sitting in first place right now. I got 13 coyotes. It's been going for about a week.
How does that work, though? Like, I've never entered into a contest because, just quite frankly, I never had the time or, the wherewithal to do it. I've always wondered how that works and how people don't cheat and how do they regulate it?
Honestly,
a month long.
Honestly,
10 in your freezer already.
Right. Well, they do as much as they can to keep people from cheating. But when it comes to that kind of stuff, I mean, if you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat. You know what I mean? But eventually you're going to get caught, and then you're going to be known as the cheater. You'll never be able to do contests again because everybody knows you cheat.
Right.
So a lot of it just goes off of how bad do you want to do the next contest. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they do certain things. Like, they have a little form that you write down every coyote. So in every time you take a picture, because this is a nationwide contest, it's actually based down where you're at in Arizona.
Okay.
And you have a paper that you write the time, the date, and there's one other thing. Hang on one second, I'll look at it. Anyways, where you got it at. So you have that list, and then you have to call in before you go hunting. You just call in and say, hey, I'm going out, or text him or whatever. And he'll text you back and say, right ear or left ear or no ears. So when you take the picture, you have to take a picture and send him a picture of the coyote with both ears, and then send him another picture of the coyote with, say he said the left ear. You cut the left ear off, then you take a picture of the coyote with the same coyote, you know, with the left ear gone and that paper. And that way, you know, that person can't use that coyote the next day because it's already missing an ear.
Got it.
But
if you shoot a coyote already from the get-go that's missing an ear, because I've done that before, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. I guess it's just something you'd have to tell them. Take a picture of it all healed up and stuff, you know. I don't know.
Right. No, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah.
All right, cool, man. I assume you do other big game hunting, do you?
I do. I go deer hunting. Yeah, with a rifle, and then I go elk hunting with a bow every year, but I don't get serious with it.
Gotcha.
Like I do coyote hunting. I spend most of my time coyote hunting because the deer and elk season, that's when the coyote hunting's the very best, you know?
Right. Yeah. Fall. For sure. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on. Where can our listeners find out a little bit more about you?
We have the YouTube channel, Coyote Assassins, and then we have Facebook page, Coyote Assassins, and then I do a lot of my stuff on my personal Facebook page, Rusty Gamble. And then we have Coyote Assassins on Instagram, and then Coyote_Yip on Instagram. Is me, my personal page. And I think that's it.
Well, guys, go give Rusty's YouTube channel a look and check out his videos.
Yeah,
Rusty, thanks for coming on, man. Oh, go ahead.
We've been doing the YouTube for 10 weeks, and we've got, I think, over 30 kills. We do it. We post a video every week or every Sunday, and it's multiple coyotes. So,
sweet.
I think they'll like it if they go check it out.
Good deal, man.
I use a decoy dog a lot this time of year too. So that's pretty fun.
Oh, you know what? I've always wanted to try that. I've never gone with anybody that had a dog trained. I'd love to try that out. That looks like fun.
It's a lot of fun. I'm still training my dog. He's just a pup, you know, but he loves it. He gets so excited, he just starts shaking like uncontrollably. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's so crazy to me how much hate that dogs and coyotes have for each other. And you wouldn't think that it's there because, you know, you look at a coyote, you think, you know, it's a canine, it's a dog, you know, but
no,
it's the same thing with like the fox and coyotes. Oh my God. They can't stand each other.
Yeah.
So I guess just competition. So cool deal, man. Well, thanks for coming on, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon. Good luck on this contest you're in, and hopefully you guys will do good at World and Nationals.
All right. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Take it easy.